as much energy pouring out of the end of the generator as you're putting into the shaft. Now try to run that by an electrical engineer. It's true, but just try to run it by one. Lorentz said, well, this other energy, he never denied it existed. It doesn't do anything, and he used a clever phrase. He said, it has no physical significance, because it doesn't power anything. That's like saying I got a sailboat on the ocean, big wind, and all the wind misses my sails have no physical significance. That's true for my boat. For those sails on my boat, that's true. The rest of that wind doesn't power my boat at all. So he said it has no physical significance. He gave a little trick to integrate the whole energy flow vector around a closed surface around any volume element of interest at all. That throws away everything that goes in and comes out with no diversion. It throws away the Heaviside component. Retains the pointing component. Now that'll agree with your measurements on the circuit. Because the energy that's dissipated from the circuit, which is what you've got to measure, has to enter the circuit, and that's the pointing component. It's not the Heaviside component, which does not enter the circuit. The average electrical engineer, it's a rare one, very rare, I would say less than 10 in the United States, even knows there is a Heaviside component missing the circuit. He never looked at it, has nothing to do with it, doesn't believe it if you tell him. Never has read the original papers. Never has gone back to see what Heaviside actually said in his papers, or what Poynting actually said in his, or what Lorentz said in his. Most of the professors have not read the original papers. Over 50% have not read them. They don't think it's necessary anymore. The perfect job was done. It wasn't. So, in every area we look at, there again was the broken symmetry of the dipole. Batteries and generators do not power circuits, never have, never will. There's not a battery, there's not a generator ever made that added a single watt to the power line. It's very easy to prove that in particle physics. It doesn't even exist in electrical engineering. In fact, they'll think you're nuts. Let's explain it. From particle physics. Starting from the award of the Nobel Prize in 1957 for the broken symmetry of opposite charges. Now, a dipole is two opposite charges, very close to each other. That's what a dipole is. So if I've got broken symmetry of opposite charges, baby, I've got broken symmetry any time I form a dipole. I don't have to prove that. It's been proven in physics. If anybody doesn't believe it, go read why Lee and Yang got the Nobel Prize in 1957 and read the papers. Read the literature. That's gotten unfashionable these days. Don't read the literature. Read what somebody wrote about the literature. No, go to the original sources. Okay, once I have this dipole, the very definition of broken symmetry says whatever is virtual, the virtual particle interaction coming in with those charges, at least a good part of that is being changed over now and is re-radiated back as not as virtual form, but as observable form. All that is coming in a time domain, which is virtual state structures of time, and re-radiating out by integrating by the spin to real stuff, just like an old, for first order analogy, just like an old spinning wheel weaving threads together, fibers together into a thread. You get them bigger, they become observable, but then they're three space because you see them. That means you catch them in three space. So what happens is, that's what the charge is doing anyway, and that's where it's coming from. But we know that once we form that source dipole, now leave it alone. Don't ever put another watt back into the circuit at all. That dipole will sit there and pour out energy forever, including both the Heaviside component and the Poynting component. Now, clever devils that we are, we've been using a 100-and-something-year-old system. Whatever we catch in that circuit, we want to drive the electrons around in a circle. We ignore the holes in the Dirac C because they mostly interact with the lattice holes, which are tied to big old ions down in the nucleus, for example, and it's so much heavier than an electron, they rock a little bit while the electrons are going. So what we do is we ignore a whole part of the electromagnetics going on, usually in power engineering particularly, and what we do, whatever we catch potentializing these electrons, we look at the back EMF between the source dipole. Every electron flow that's potentializing goes around this way down to the ground side. We have to pump its equivalent right back up through that back EMF and knock the charges apart. So it takes precisely one half the energy it does collect to destroy its own dipole that's pulling the energy out of the vacuum to power the circuit. The other half powers the circuit. It powers the losses and loads, which means less than half in a real circuit with losses. Less than half is actually developed as power in the load. You got a half used to kill the dipole. You got less than half used to power the load. you got to put back in at least as much to work back on those charges and force them back apart to make the dipole again as it took to destroy it. So you got to put more in and you get out the load. And that's the only reason on God's green earth we're building COP less than one circuit. Universally. Closed current loop circuit restores Lorentz symmetry. And forces us into COP less than one. Forces us into classical equilibrium thermodynamics. Forces us into the second law of thermo. And baby, you can't beat it. If you have an open system, a common home heat pump, for example, has a, under good conditions, has a COP of about 4.0. Theoretical maximum is 8.22. But the average one with its inefficiencies and all is about 4. It puts out about 4 times as much actual energy delivered in, you know, heating the air, or pumping the air, or whatever, or cooling the air, as you have to physically put in electromagnetic form. It gets the rest of it by compressing the air and taking out the energy out of its external environment. It's an open system, perfectly permitted to do COP1. The only reason we don't close loop heat pumps and sell power at home is because they're diabolically designed so you can't have a high efficiency process. You've got to have the low efficiency. There have been high efficiencies when patented and they disappear. Because when it cools off out there, bingo, now you're back on resistance heating. They lose so much efficiency you can't get anything out of them. You've got to go to a resistor. So now you burn power. Everything has been designed to keep that power meter on your house and keep that gas pump meter on your gas pump and keep you out of an electric car. Doesn't have to be designed that way, but it's been designed that way deliberately. Now, the electrical engineer don't know it. The electrical engineer doesn't even know about the Heaviside theory. It's a very rare one that has ever read the original papers in the first place, and he didn't pay any attention to the fact there's a hell of a lot more energy coming out of the terminals of a battery or generator than what we're putting in the shaft or the chemical energy we expend it. It never registered. Now that's appalling after 100 years, over 100, 1880s. It's appalling. Why is not the National Science Foundation reacting to this? I don't know. Why is not the National Academy of Sciences? Well, for one thing, it's prestigious. You get elected to the National Academy of Sciences. And you're not fixing to pull the rug out from under your prestige and what you've done. No way. You're going to see it's done a little better. Commend the young guys on doing better research, make it a little more efficient, but you're not going to go throw out the whole system and start a new one. That's the problem. We have now, really, it's not diabolical, it's honest. But what it is the whole scientific community, is, you know, the bulk of it is dedicated to maintaining the status quo. Mm-hmm. And that's what's wrong with us. We're still using an archaic science. We're still affecting what the chemist is allowed to do because we're giving him a U1 model. And we're teaching him U1 electrodynamics. He never heard, most of them, of these higher symmetry electromagnetics. And certainly, I don't know of any chemical textbooks using them. There should be. They've been around a long time. Why are we not funding deliberate research to get outside the box, to get outside the present model, so we can get new chemistry? We can get marvelous advances in chemistry, such as this thing. Why aren't we doing that? I don't know. Because we upset somebody's rice bowl when we do. And they don't want their rice bowls upset. And that's basically what it's all about.
Yeah, we're getting it in droves.
I'll give you one more thing, and then this will be over. When you deal with the super system, you now have to understand engines. I'm going to start in general relativity. In general relativity, if I change the local energy density of the vacuum in any form, whether it's mass or whatever, any form of energy that I change, the energy density of this local space right here, this little position, I immediately have a curvature of space-time. That's the way it's modeled. I'm talking about a model. Now, curvature of space-time is not just an etheric kind of idea that'll go away and not bite you. It's a very active, dynamic thing. Space-time is considered to be the active thing, and I'm glad it is because time is the part of it that's really active, giving us all the energy. So they got it in there, but they call it space-time. They call the part that isn't changing, really, from the repeated observation, but the part that is. So, but once I have a curvature of space-time, I now have, I'll quote Wheeler's principle. If I change the mass energy, they speak of the energy in the mass rather than the mass, if I change the mass energy in density, I change space-time. I affect space-time. I cannot avoid that interaction. It's absolutely automatic. Now,